Good morning and welcome to Sport and Life with Sam Kakovich and Leon Wigard. Sam, good day.
Good day, Leon. What a weekend, eh? I don't know, did you watch the rugby league in Vegas?
I did. I think most people had a sneaky look. I didn't look at a lot of it, but more than half, probably.
It's interesting, isn't it? You know, we've always made incursions into other territories, AFL. And all of a sudden, the rugby league, which we've always treated with a bit of disdain and dismissiveness in that regard, but I thought they were fairly proactive here, and I thought it was a pretty good promo, and I reckon it's probably got some legs in long term in Vegas. And you know, Volandis, you've got to doff your lid to him. He's, you know, he's been fairly creative and a great visionary. I think it's got some legs. But the interesting thing, Leon, now I don't know if you know anything about the rugby league culture. I'm sure you do. You've been involved in sports.
Rugby league and culture. But why, like,
that's an oxymoron. I know it's an oxymoron, I know. But the reality is, and guess what? Every law enforcement agency in Vegas would have been on standby till they departed Vegas, I reckon.
Oh, I think they'd be under strict instructions. I think there's so much speculation that somebody'd muck up.
Well, I think, look, overall it was a big tick, I think, for rugby league. But that one transgression, I think, would have probably balanced the books.
Yeah, so bad luck, yeah.
Bad luck, that racist slur, or alleged one, or whatever they say these days, I don't know. There's a presumption of innocence until proven guilty, they say, but I don't think that's the case.
Has the case been heard yet?
No, they've delayed it till Tuesday, would you believe that? I thought they would have hit it on the head straight away, but obviously they want to do a little bit of work behind the back. The lobbyists would have done a bit of work behind the scenes to try to mollify it as best as possible.
Talking about that sort of thing, Sam Kerr is in
well, there's trouble. There's another big blight on our sporting landscape, and that'll be an interesting one because you know they got an Olympic year coming up. She's the captain of the Matildas. It'll be interesting how they're perceived. There's a hearing in London at the moment. Apparently they said there's a trial for four. It's going to take 4 days.
Yeah, and they're going to have it next year.
And they're going to have it next year. How does that work?
It took a year for the complaint to come forward.
Well, that's the thing. There's something sinister at work here. Some evil forces.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, they're trying to sweep it under the carpet. And I have a sneaking suspicion, and both you and I are both conspiratorial. I have a sneaking suspicion that these evil forces, these sinister forces, try to knock it on the head before it became public. But what I can't understand is that intrepid media that we're aware of wouldn't have got hold of it, you know, at some stage or another, because it's a big story, for God's sake. And but it was never reared its ugly face on the surface. But of course now it's going to be bigger than Ben-Hur when it finally... regardless of what happens.
Now, you talk about big stories. The biggest story in football, AFL football, was when South Melbourne was dragged, screaming and yelling, to Sydney.
Indeed.
And the fact that it's been a huge success doesn't sort of change the circumstances under which it happened. The guy who was in charge of the Keep South at South group is John Keogh, who subsequently, with a lot of other South Melbourne people, went to Sydney finally, in spiritually, and that's fair enough. And I think they enjoy our friend Glenys Murray.
That's right.
There's another one, desperate South Melbourne, Sydney Swans supporter.
Well, Tor, so, it was like I remember vividly. You know, it was almost like the Civil War, brother against brother.
Yes.
You know, that's how bad it was. I remember Alan Naylor, who was the presiding AFL chief. You know, he had death threats. He had bodyguards staying at his house. That's how passionate it was at the time.
They were all North Melbourne blokes, half whacked.
You couldn't help yourself.
John Keogh joins us now. John, they were hairy days for you, and they must have been happy, sad days when you reflect on it all.
Oh, yes. Leon, it was tremendous times, like you mentioned. We went through a lot of activities to try to reform the Keep South at South to see what we could do to keep them playing at South Melbourne. That was to no avail because the South Melbourne Football Club sent a letter to members in July of 81 to made an approach to the VFL to play 11 games under lights at VFL Park and 11 games in Sydney. I attended a meeting of the officers of Brendan and Bean in Port Melbourne to discuss forming a committee to oppose this this decision. I don't know if you remember Brendan Bean, but Brendan Bean yep. was number four for Port Melbourne. He was a great footballer. He was a tremendous mark, but he couldn't kick goals. Then we set up an inaugural meeting of the group to form the Keep South at South Committee. The Mayor of South Melbourne presided as chair. Nominations were called for the committee, and I was elected as the chairman. We had our first conference, the steps of South Melbourne Town Hall, with our intention, invited us to join us.
So at that time, the move to Sydney was being driven by the AFL, no doubt, from AFL House in Jollymont.
Yeah, that's correct, yes.
So it was really taking on City Hall, wasn't it? I mean, you knew that anyway. That's why you had the fight. But
that's right. Yeah, yeah. Well, we sent a letter to all our members advising them of what our intentions were. We had a meeting with the existing South Melbourne board as Keith has Keep South at South, and Bob Hawke was an arbitrator.
God.
Yeah, we sent a letter to the South Melbourne Football Club advising them that a requisition has been signed by sufficient members to call an extraordinary general meeting with the express purpose of proposing a vote of no confidence in the present board and the removal of office of each and every member of the South Melbourne Football Club and replaced by the members of the Keep South at South.
And how'd that go?
Well, that went all right. We got the numbers, and a meeting was... an extraordinary meeting was called at the Caulfield Town Hall. The outcome was that the Keep South of South Committee was elected to run the South Melbourne Football Club. Of course, I make that sound quite simple, but a lot of, as you mentioned, a lot of goings-on went prior to that with all sorts of activities happening. The VFL were advised that a new board of management, South Melbourne Football Club, and I was elected as to be the director of the VFL on behalf of the South Melbourne Football Clubs.
Well, we got to that stage, and when did the heavyweights come in with the heavy artillery and start making big noises about pulling up to Sydney?
Yeah, well, as you know, the board of directors of the VFL voted, as I mentioned earlier, to play 11 games in Sydney. A meeting was called by the VFL board to discuss the reversing of this proposal that was put forward to them. And the motion was voted by the clubs and was defeated. So it was a fait accompli that the South Melbourne Football Club were to
disband
11 games in Sydney. Yes.
John, interestingly enough, I guess, being the incumbent president, you would have been at loggerheads because your loyalties would have laid obviously with South Melbourne. keep South Melbourne at South and to your members. But the stark reality was that the not only were you insolvent, but half the BFL was insolvent, and you could see on it, you would have been able to see moving forward that you had no option but to either relocate to survive.
No, you're right, Sam. We found that the club were in debt of up to $180,000, and back in 1981, that was a lot of money. But we didn't. You don't find these sort of things out until you get into the situation where you have the ability to find it out. So it was, as you say, it was a fait accompli. There was no really other alternative. Otherwise, we would have been insolvent.
Let's get into some of the personalities around. I've always been a great admirer of Craig Kimberley through all of that, who was a dedicated South Melbourne supporter.
Yeah.
Was convinced, of course, that going to Sydney was the only way they could survive, but still went had his company, Just Jeans, sponsor South Melbourne to give you every hope of getting through that next year.
Yeah, that's correct. And when the AFL, in actual fact, took over the running of the Swans, Craig Kimberley was included as a membership, a pseudo board of the Sydney Swans, and he was involved then. Yeah, a great man.
John, do you marvel now, you know, you talk about 180,000, and in the broader scheme of things, you talk about the contemporary landscape, that's not even, you know, they spill that much wine at the chairman's luncheon.
That's correct.
And you talk about your membership numbers, you know, you'd be lucky if you had 2,000 or 3,000 members in those days. And
Sam, they only had 1,000 members.
Well, there you go, 1,000 members, and I guess your office staff would have run with one secretary and a general manager, if that.
That's right.
And you know, you look at the current, setup. You know, you must marvel at the progression of the game, and it is just mind-boggling.
Yeah, they've done an absolutely wonderful job. They really have. Yeah. And we're still members. I've got 5 children, 4 boys, and I've got 14 grandchildren, and between all of us, we make up about 20 members of the Swans Football Club.
And tell me something that I remember talking to Alan at length, and I was all over the top of this because I was involved with Sydney Ganning up there in the first instance, because I was with a brewery and I bought 1,000 membership tickets through which we needed to avert the Keep South at South. And because I was with Tooth and Company at the time, the brewery. And by buying 1,000 membership tickets, we averted the Keep South at South and we'll guarantee the pouring rights out of the Sydney Cricket Ground. And that was the reason why the brewery got involved. But all that aside, what amazed me more than anything was the ability of Alan and the AFL to get together the 12 presidents or the majority of presidents to relinquish their hold and to hand over the running of the entire operation, the entire VFL, to a commission. That must have had some, you know, enormous amount of effort and convincing.
To the AFL clubs, Leon and I were members of the then VFL club, and I don't know. That was the only way that the club... The Swans would survive with needing sort of financial and also guidance as to how to run the club.
Actually, John, you'll remember these days, and one of the reasons that I was a great supporter of the idea of, after a few things they didn't support, but of the setting up of a body above the AFL board, was that you'd remember we'd have board meetings. We'd have all these very, very in-depth discussions, very confidential, not to go out of this room. All right, that's fine. And then we'd have dinner after, if you remember. We used to do a trivia quiz. That's how casual it was. But between the time the meetings finished and the dinner started, everybody was on a phone telling their clubs how to break the rules we just made. So... It came to my, it's pretty simple, that somebody had to take over that were truly independent.
Yes.
And then there was a subcommittee formed to try and pick those people out. Well, they'd already picked them out. Yeah. I was on that subcommittee. Yeah.
Well, you need an autonomous body to run it. There's no doubt about that.
No, you're right, Leon. You remember you'd go home and and listen to the radio on the way home, and you'd find out all the things that were discussed at the board meeting.
Right, let's continue with the names. Barry Rowan was the guy that made, he was the biggest name, I think, that made the crossing from South to Sydney. And
yes, he was, and he was quite supportive right from day one of going to Sydney,
Ricky Quaid was the coach, of course.
Yeah.
He was, yes.
How about, when did Willisie get involved? That was...
Late in the 80s.
It was late, much later, was it?
Yeah, well after my time, yeah.
Now, going through that list, I was talking to you before about this, I looked up the list of former presidents or presidents of the Sydney Swans. Graham John was actually president of South Melbourne too, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And Jack Marks, who was South Melbourne. Then there was there anybody before Edelson?
Yeah, well, I was the first chairman, and then Bill Collins took over for chairman for probably about 9 months, and that was followed by Sir James Hardy. He only stayed around for a month, and then Michael Edgley got involved for probably about 4.5 years, and that was up until Edelston took over in 5 years.
Edgley, he was the guy.
Michael Edgley, show business promoter. But Liam, they're only all figureheads.
They were all figureheads. You're dead right.
They weren't participants very much. They were good and helpful, but they really weren't behind. Didn't have the time to involve with it.
I was amazed at the amount of effort that went to get South to move. But what amazed me even more so was the lack of effort into making it a compatible, environment when you arrived. I couldn't believe for the life of me there was no ground available to you. The players were, left off their own to run their own devices. I know players there... They weren't paid, they couldn't pay their mortgages, their cars were repossessed. You couldn't believe for an operation of, like the AFL, well, the AFL today, but the VFL as it was known then, probably didn't have the resource, but it must have been very difficult times to make some inroads into a highly competitive arena and to survive.
Yeah, that's correct. It was very, very difficult times. And as I say, with the AFL's help or the VFL's help at the time, that was the only way we did survive because we didn't have any money, we didn't have any members, and we're trying to put on a show up in Sydney that it wasn't really accepted by the Sydney people.
Yeah, it's amazing that, you look at that, 30, 40 years down the road, just the enormity of the inroad that's been made.
Absolutely wonderful.
Yep. Those early days, I keep harping back to the early days because I was there for 3 years myself. And I remember coming along and, watching it all from that embryonic stage to where it is now. And I just marvel at, how you often survived. And I know how the players felt, totally disenfranchised. They were, cast aside. They were unknown. But... I guess there were a couple of pivotal moves you've made to make it survive. Some key personnel. What do you reckon were some of those moments in time or defining moments that sort of tilted it in a favourable direction?
Yeah, well, the first year we were up there, we only won 6 games, that's for sure. We ran some very elaborate pre game luncheons, of which we invited quite a lot of well-known
A-listers
personalities, and that was because of the involvement with Graeme Huggins. He was a really a real good marketing man, and also we got the backing of the marketing fellow up there. I can't think of his name at the moment. Jim somebody, and he involved us a lot with people and get us. But it was mainly, I think, through these elaborate luncheons and after-match entertainment that we had that sort of got us liked a little bit more, I think.
And the media were fairly friendly, weren't they?
They were
receptive.
Yeah, they were very good. Yeah. To a degree. We never made the back page very often, but we did always get good support. But there again, we invited them to all our luncheons and things like that, so we tried to make a pass of them in the best way we could.
Well, with the media, blokes like Tom Hafey helped with that, I think. The club was very smart in getting pin-up boys, if you like. You know, the full forwards, Tony Lockett,
Kappa.
Barry Hall.
Warwick Kappa.
That's right.
Warwick
yes.
Kappa.
Yes.
That helped a lot. And then, of course, they had a few people who were media savvy too, so that helped.
Yeah. Well, it does, that's for sure. There's no doubt about that at all, yeah. But we're going back to the early times. They were very, as you mentioned, Sam, very harrowing times, that's for sure.
So what happened to the people left behind? In my case with Fitzroy, it was terrible because they were sort of fragmented. You know, they gave it away entirely. They went to Brisbane or they followed junior football, whatever. But what happened to the South Melbourne supporter group, even though it was a small number? Although there was a lot more supporters.
Yeah, well, of course, Leon, as you well know, they played 11 games in Sydney. So every second week, the team were on television. And not only did the South Melbourne supporters sort of watch it, lots of other people watched it too. The South Melbourne supporters, they were a bit very hesitant to start with, but I think as time went on, that they all came back, that's for sure. But I can remember getting abusive letters and abusive telephone calls because they'd say that, you know, I led the Keith House at South, but I stayed with the football club in Sydney. But the reason we did that is we spoke to the then VFL, and they said that you were voted to run the club by the members, and you should remain to do the same. So that's what we did.
John, the other thing that's interesting, I think the work of Richard Collis did a heck of a lot to bridge that gap.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
To embrace the South Melbourne arm of the joint venture or the new Sydney Swans. You know, for argument's sake, you got the Bob Skilton Best and Fairest Award. You know, you had him on the board. You had him on those are key figureheads of the club, for want of a better term.
Yeah.
So I think the South Melbourne people, who originally were sort of disenfranchised and a bit angry and irate at the proceedings, they gradually warmed to the fact that they had a genuine club.
No doubt about that, Sam. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Richard Collis, I've only been to one function, as Leon knows. When you're in, when you're out. I've only been back to one function since I left, and that was the 25-year celebration of the Swans in Sydney, and that was an invitation from Richard Collis, and he made Beverly and I very welcome.
Good man, Richard, and of course, prior to him was Peter Whitehead. He was also very important.
My word.
Yes, they were. But as I say, they were all after my time.
I tell you the other guy, Basil
Sellers.
Yeah, he was up there.
He wanted to buy the club at one stage. Well, he was.
He did. He was in opposition to to Dr. Edelston to buy the club back in 1986.
Actually, it wasn't Dr. Edelston. What's the company behind? There was another packaging.
Power Play.
Power Play, that's right. Power Play.
Dr. Edelston never, ever owned this one.
Never
owned it.
That was a great furphy, but he was the figurehead. He was the upfront. So, you know, the pink chopper and there.
If only he could get the media. If he could get the media on site.
Yeah.
He was a whiz, wasn't he? His pink suits.
Oh, bloody hell, he was. Yeah, well,
Leanne.
His wife helped a bit.
Leanne was she was an asset, no doubt.
John, the journey over the last 20 years has been magnificent for, 20 or even further than that. It's been magnificent. And just in modern times, John Longmire, he's probably underrated. He must go down eventually as one of the great coaches of all time.
Yeah, well, I think he likes it that way too. I think he's not a big noter. He's a very humble person. And he has the support of all his players, which makes it very important for a football club, that's for sure.
Good country boy, and he learnt his stuff at North Melbourne, which is, very humble club, and
and a lot to be humble
about. Those intangible qualities of pride, dignity, and respect are very pertinent and very prevalent at our club, which we exude all those wonderful qualities of humility. Thank you for mentioning that, John. Sometimes I have trouble getting through to Leon on those issues. But I've got to say, John, look, I'd imagine you look back, you know, and I'm not being patronising or condescending, but you should look back with a great deal of pride on your contribution there, because without that historic moment, you know, with your presence, like I say to people, you know, next time you take a glass drink of water, remember those that dug the well, because without your hard yards and all the abuse and whatever else you cop, but the strength and the guidance and the courage you exuded ultimately led to where they are now, and people should never forget those yards, even at the spur of the moment. You know, there's all the malice and all the vile and the bile that goes with it. But when the dust settles, you know, your contribution was absolutely should be recognised and noted.
Yeah, thanks, Sam. Yeah, well, it sort of changed my life because it got me involved in football, which I sort of remained for. I was still involved up to 2019, all those years in different organisations, tribunals, helping with the TAC Cup in setting that up. It made a full involvement with football after that time.
John, it's been it's a great pleasure going back over the time too. And by the way, just before we finish up, what was your background in the footy? Did you play footy as a kid?
No. I was hopeless, Leon. But I just admit that I'm just an administrator.
And a keen supporter, obviously.
And a keen supporter.
And why South originally?
Oh, born and bred in South Melbourne. Leon.
Local boy.
Yeah, attended all the games with my brother at a very early age. I was a member of the Gold Pass at the South Melbourne Football Club.
Geez, I thought for a moment you were going to say the Painters and Dockers.
Sam, when you're on their side, they're always friends.
Oh, God.
They were good times. They really were.
They're fantastic. You'll never see them again.
Well, it's good to see that the name, the Swans, continues, because the history of South Melbourne, you know, some of those great players, you know, the Guns and the players going way, way back, Pratts.
Well, not only that, but in
Skilton particularly.
Johnny, what about what are the greatest people forget? But what about the Sunday sip at the South Melbourne? It was just legendary. You know, the barrel on Sunday, North Melbourne.
Right.
Like, I remember when Norm Smith coached there. Yeah, that was 70, right. 71. The Sunday morning barrels, they were just, honestly, it was like World of Sport. It was like a cabaret session. You know, we get there at 10 o'clock and leave at 5 o'clock, rather chicken.
we didn't win very many games over the period, Sam, but we had a lot of fun on the way through.
Did we have a lot of fun?
Did you go to the night football matches at South Melbourne? Are you old enough for that?
Totally, yes. Well, the dark corner there.
The dark corner. It should never get reported.
Yeah. I kicked two goals there from a forward pocket. No one saw me. They didn't know.
It was probably someone else who kicked them.
Yeah, see what I mean? Right.
Your first back to the centre.
No, the following day in the paper, they had two goal kickers, two goals unknown.
Is that right?
No, I just
made that. John, good to talk to you, old times and new times, and more strength to you, and thanks for joining us on Sport and Life.
And now, before we go, John, before I got you, I know there's a brief, I don't know if you engage yourself in a quiet sip these days, but I dare say.
I do, like the red, yes.
Yes, well, you know, we're sponsored by a very good mutual friend of ours, as you know, Jerry Ryan, who's at Mitchelton, and yeah. And we always give our guests a couple of bottles.
No, offer them.
Offer them, a couple, yes. Leon's in charge of distribution. And we've been doing this for 4 years. There's 200 people still waiting in the queue to receive their bottle. So you are certainly being offered two bottles. When you're in receipt of them, I've got no idea, mate, but we'll catch up somewhere and we'll share the odd convivial.
Okay, well, I've enjoyed the company. Thanks very much, fellows.
John Keogh was president of the Keep South at South, and a very great contributor to the game of footy. We'll join you next week.